Hey everyone, this is Doug. Welcome to our Star Wars episode. Before we get going, I wanted to let you know we had a little bit of audio trouble in the recording here, but much like George Lucas's special editions, we had to go back in and do a little editing to make them perfect? But hopefully that doesn't take away from your enjoyment. I think we had a lot of fun making this episode, and I think you're really going to like it. And with that said, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Greetings, pilgrims, and welcome to another episode of Quarks and Recreation. I'm your co-host, Doug.
I'm your other co-host, Brandon.
And today we're covering the science of Star Wars. And with us we have a returning special guest, Dan Oster.
Hey there, Doug. Nice to be here.
So where do you want to start here? I didn't even know how to organize the science of Star Wars, because there's so many different things to talk about across seven movies and the EU. And of course, spoiler alert up front, if we end up talking about The Force Awakens, we may spoil something here or there. But I have, what I did was I put together a list of like all the different tech I could think of from the movies, different locations, and different races and creatures. So there's physics, there's biology, there's geology, there's all kinds of things we could go into depending on where things take us. So, Brandon, where do you want to start?
I mean, I guess we could start with one of the trademarks, the lightsaber. Everybody knows what that is.
Sure. Obviously, Dan, do you know what the in-universe explanation is for how the lightsaber works?
Well, I think industrial light and magic and the construction of the lightsaber is actually a very important step in a Jedi's journey. So I think we'll find a lot with the science within Star Wars that boils down to
magic.
I mean,
it's not like Star Trek, which sort of went out of its way to try and be more science-y. Star Wars is definitely more fanciful and magical. But there is some science to the idea of bending plasma, which is, I think, what it's supposed to be, right? It's a crystal that produces this plasma beam that is then, like, contained within a blade-like form.
Well, I always thought that the most challenging aspect of the lightsaber to me is that you could create a beam that would just sort of stop.
Yeah, I assumed it was bent. Yeah, I assumed it was bent back in on itself.
Yeah.
In some way. But I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, there are lots of ways to bend light. You can bend light with, say, glass and prisms and mirrors. You can bend it with powerful electromagnetism, and you can bend light with gravity. But not really in any way that could fit in the palm of your hand.
Mm-hmm. And Doug, you can suspend disbelief.
I sure can.
I always thought that the idea of an energy sword would be slightly more plausible if there was just some sort of inner on the inside of the beam, right? See, you know, lightsaber is so cool because you turn it off and you go like, shroom, and it's gone. I would buy it a little more real, as a little more realistic, if it had something on the, an emitter on the inside of the beam, in the center of the sword, if that makes sense. In the core of it.
So, like, it would telescope out. Like, there was, like, some, like, solid pole in the middle of it that was then emitting this energy.
I feel a little bit more like I was plausible, yeah.
I mean, you could definitely make something that telescopes. I mean, you can buy an umbrella that does that, that just folds up in on itself. I think, the real trick to a lightsaber is, how do you get something that generates that much energy to fit in something the size of a flashlight without destroying the container? Like that's pretty tough to do.
I'm going to ask my favorite Star Wars character, Elon Musk.
That is definitely a Star Wars-esque name. Brandon, do you know who Elon Musk is?
No.
He's an inventor. He created PayPal, a few other things. Now he's all those Tesla cars, those are his. He's working on this Hyperloop transit system, which is sort of like a magnetic bullet train.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, Brandon, you've got one of his big
Yeah, you would have solar panels on your roof, and then throughout the course of the day, the energy would get stored up in these batteries on the side of your house, and that would just help in terms of running things like your refrigerator or your washer-dryer, whatever. But, yeah, I don't know how you would... you can certainly... Scientists have worked on creating plasma in a lab. You can create that state of matter, and that's a state of matter that is more energetic than gas. It goes solid, liquid, gas, and then plasma, which is what you would find, say, on the surface of the sun. So it can be done, but yeah, we're a long way away from being able to, like, just strap something on a belt that you could use to, you know, cut open a door with.
Yeah.
Or a Tauntaun.
Or a Tauntaun. That's another one we could talk about. The scene where he, in Empire Strikes Back, if you remember, Luke is on Hoth, and he's going to freeze to death, so he cuts open this sort of llama-like animal and crawls inside it. And
like, for warmth, right? Or...
Right. And they're even smellier.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, I hope it's for warmth. Yeah, this, we've got another reason to crawl inside a Tauntaun. They're even smellier on the inside, so I hear. I think I looked this up online, and it turns out it wouldn't work. It wouldn't keep you warm enough. But certainly you can, I mean, animals, people have been using animal skins to stay warm for a long time.
Oddly enough, in the movie The Revenant, I don't think it's a spoiler to say there's a moment in that movie, which is pretty much the exact same thing. He's got a dead horse, and he didn't kill the horse, but he, you know, needs to sleep, and it's nighttime, and he cuts it open, and, you know, yanks out all the innards and gets inside of it. Now in the morning, he is inside a frozen horse.
Right.
Which sounds about right, but I don't, yeah, it seemed to imply that that was a smart thing to do.
Yeah, if given all the options that Luke had, I would take that one any day. I guess it would depend on how cold Hoth is. I mean, one of the issues that Star Wars planets seem to have is that they're very uniform. Like, unlike Earth, where we have, you know, Arctic regions and deserts and jungles and stuff, like
one planet is it's desert or it's jungle or
it's ice. Yeah, so if the planet is so cold that it's, you know, really just an ice planet even at the equator, it's hard to imagine, like, what are the average temperatures that they're dealing with out there. That's got to be, and I guess the geography isn't known either. Like, you don't know where that base is, if that base is, you know, really far to the north or south or what.
Well, again, you know, I think with some sci-fi, you start with the psi, and then you add the phi. Star Wars starts with the phi, and if it has time, it adds a little time.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I don't want this to be a podcast where we just spend all this time, like, pooping on Star Wars and going, it couldn't work in real life.
Well, yeah, all right, fine. But I won't say, like, there's a limited number of geographical conditions on planet Earth, which is why you have that in Star Wars. All right, I won't do that.
I just think it's fun to look at these things and then kind of look at them through a scientific lens and see where that takes us. Yeah, I know. And I mean, if we sat here and, like, picked apart everything, that'd be no fun at all. Plus, I mean...
It's amusing to me because I really do like Star Wars, but I think I like it more for the storytelling element than the science. But
yeah.
To bring up an interesting point with Hoth, I never honestly gave it that much thought that it would, for the entire planet to be ice, then the thing would have to be pretty darn cold.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly... you could imagine going to, say, Mars... I mean, that's a good analog where if you were at Mars's equator, if Mars actually had a lot of atmosphere and water, it could be very well be frozen out, and you would have a planet that looked more like Hoth, but Mars just happens to not have so much water on the surface. Maybe we should just fire up the hyperdrive and go somewhere else. What do you want to talk about, Brandon?
I mean, you say hyperdrive, then light speed.
Okay. So, faster than light speed... light speed itself is very hard to do because the way it works is, imagine you need to go the speed of light. You need a lot of fuel to go the speed of light, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's the problem. Fuel is heavy.
So
you need more fuel to push the fuel that you're hauling, and you never get there, right? In fact, that's one of the problems with any equations or theories about how do we go past the speed of light. It's as you approach the speed of light, your mass increases, and therefore you never quite get there. I don't know that Star Wars has an in-universe explanation for how they get around the speed of light, because hyperspace implies that they're not traveling through normal three-dimensional space, that they are somehow between dimensions or using something like that. Dan, do you know how they would explain it?
Yeah, I got, all I know is that it has a very rational and real scientific explanation.
I just know that they always,
that's all I know. I'm messing with you. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I feel like I'm going to probably learn more on this podcast than I'm going to be able to explain. The idea that they're going through some sort of wormhole, is that what you're implying? Or even
I don't know, because, I mean, they certainly don't say in any... None of the movies do they ever say, here's how...
No, they
just do it. But I know that there's a whole library of books and video games and comic books.
Well, the expanded universe stuff has been thrown out. So.
A lot, that's true. A lot of it has.
Let's go off of what we can observe. That's pretty scientific. Mm-hmm. When they go into hyperspace, they're in that blue tunnel.
Space Mountain. Like, if you were to ever go on Space Mountain, it looks like, you know, that.
Yeah. And actually, that has some scientific validity to it in the fact that it's bluish. One of the things that happens as you speed up is color would change from your perspective. So, Brandon, you ever have a train pass you by? You ever, like, been standing?
Yeah.
Okay. So it goes, meow, as it goes past you. So the sound starts up high, and then it gets lower. So why is that? The reason is, the train is sending out sound waves, right? But as the sound waves ahead of the train are getting squished together because the train's sort of catching up with them, whereas the sound waves behind the train are getting stretched out as the train goes along. So those bunched up sound waves are at a higher frequency and therefore sound higher pitched to your ear. Well, light does the same thing. A moving object, as it approaches you, will compress the light waves in front of it and stretch out the light waves behind it. You have to be moving incredibly fast. I mean, at a significant fraction of the speed of light to notice this. But if they were, in fact, zooming ahead at the speed of light, things in front of them would appear slightly more blue. So, there you go. There's some science.
Totally.
All right. Nailed it.
One thing in Star Wars that's always, that seems very impossible is... they build a giant planet.
I watched an amazing video on this. I put a link to it on our Facebook video, which is like, how much would the Death Star cost?
Oh my God.
And people actually ran the calculation of, like, assuming it's made out of, ordinary steel, and steel, I mean, it was, in the quadrillions of dollars.
I guess if you're, in galactic space, they don't really seem to, follow out laws. They just do what they want.
Well, also, they have a lot of resources.
Let me ask you, do you consider, economic science?
Sure. Yeah, economics is a science.
Science, because I've always wondered that about the Galactic Empire. It seems to me that they're spending pretty much 100% of their gross domestic product on defense.
That's true. They are very, very much military-oriented.
And you never see them really eat. Where do they store all the food? Where do they eat?
On the Death Star? No one... Obviously, it's not very...
How does Darth Vader eat? I mean, he's got a mask and he can't breathe without the mask.
He takes the mask off, though. He takes it off in Return of the Empire.
Yeah, he takes it off, but not for too long, because...
I guess he takes either that or he can feed himself through a tube, in
the
suit.
And then, speaking of Darth Vader, I've seen a video where people know what all the buttons do, where I don't know how you find that out.
Those were all things that were probably released by, Lucas... Not obviously in the movies, but again, in this, what they call the expanded universe. So,
yeah, I'm sure there was a book that was called Darth Vader's Button. I mean, I'm not kidding. There probably was. It was this one is the air conditioning,
Right. I mean, that's probably exactly right. I mean, as far as where they store all that stuff, you just have to assume that...
it's there.
There's a galley. They have... I mean, we don't see every room on there. They've got to have storage spaces and sleeping...
I mean, maybe they don't eat in the Star Wars universe. Or
you don't
hardly eat.
You really don't see a lot of eating in Star Wars. You see, in the new one...
I believe Luke had, a couple of, taquitos or something.
Yeah.
There's that pear that they eat in Attack of the Clones. He, makes it travel across the table.
I'm sure they eat something in the cantina. Somebody's eating somewhere.
Or drinking. Yeah. Mostly drinking.
Yeah, we could talk about the science of blue milk.
Is that what that is?
And Tatooine, yeah. One of the first scenes there with Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, they're drinking, some sort of blue, opaque liquid.
I wonder if that's... I've heard that, for example, in cereal commercials, they have to use fake... milk, because under the lights that they use to film, it looks bluish. Although I think that stuff is paint, right? It's really blue looking. I can't remember now. It's been a while since I've seen A New Hope, but I don't think it looks like milk under a light.
It's been a while since I've seen
it. Yeah, it's sort of a blue liquid they're eating there, drinking there.
Space juice.
They have, speaking of, I know we're kind of all over the map here, but on Tatooine, they have these things called moisture evaporators. So I'm assuming that it's not an evaporator, it's a evaporator. So it would pull moisture out of the air or the ground. I mean, is that...
Yeah.
They're like moisture farmers. I think that's like their profession.
I think that is their profession, which kind of makes sense on a desert planet. Like, there's not a lot of water, so, I mean, that's going to be a major part of the economy. It's like people who can produce water that's drinkable.
Everybody seems poor in Star Wars, I have to admit. I have to say, everybody besides, you know, like, Leia and her, but everybody, like, especially Tatooine, seems very poor and poverty-stricken. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's intentional.
You're made to believe that, you know, Tatooine is in the Luke says that there's a bright center of the galaxy or on the planet that it's farthest from.
But isn't that when, like, what's her name? Ren? Ray?
Ray?
Yeah. Isn't she on Tatooine in the beginning? Is that
no,
Tatooine?
No, and Brandon, I can't fault you for thinking that, but you have to believe that there's another planet that looks just like Tatooine that's not Tatooine.
It's called...
There's also an ice planet, but it's not Hoth, and there's a forest planet... But it's not Yami.
It's called Jakku, that planet.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there's only so many different biomes you can imagine. Yeah. So, I mean, I think you would expect to see some planets that were dry.
I think you could have gotten.
You could have. You could have done a little more. But, I mean, but suffice it to say, like, you know, yeah, I think everybody is in a depressed economic state. And it's not very clear. I mean, we don't learn a lot about what the Empire is up to. Like, why are they evil? Like, what are they actually doing?
Space Nazis.
They're space Nazis, I guess. But, I mean, the only evil thing you really see them do is blow up a planet,
which is pretty bad. Probably the most evil thing you can do.
I guess, but they don't give you a reason as to why, right? They're just that they're harboring...
They're like terrorists. I think they're in charge.
I can tell you the reason they blow up Alderaan is the display of their power. I mean, they're demonstrating that the Death Star works.
I guess that's true.
And they wanted something from Leia, right?
The Tarkin Doctrine, you know, as laid out by Grand Moff Tarkin, is to rule through fear. You know, that's why they're able to abolish... They abolished the Imperial... I'm just talking about politics. They abolished the Imperial Senate in the beginning of A New Hope, and literally they're discussing, well, how are we supposed to maintain order without the bureaucracy? And they're like, well, we got a big giant laser that blows up planets. That's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of impossible. How much energy you need for that? Right,
it's a lot. Yeah, you definitely need a lot. I wouldn't even begin to venture behind the science of the Death Star.
In the new one, weren't they taking power from the sun?
Yeah, that's the Star Killer base from Force Awakens. Essentially, it like vacuums up the energy from a nearby star and then blasts it in the direction of a planet. There is, if you want to get a little sciencey about this, if you look at black holes and quasars, they actually do emit jets of energy from their poles, one up and one down, or at least they can if they're energetic enough. So you can imagine a singularity if they are created, and that's probably what you would need to suck the energy from a nearby star. So you put a black hole in the center of this planet that somehow doesn't destroy it. But, okay, you put it there. If you could create a singularity, you could, in theory, also create these jets that you would point in some particular direction. In fact, if you were...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you were on a world that was in the path... We're very lucky, frankly, on Earth that we're not in the path of one of these things. Because if there was one close enough... It would bombard the Earth with, like, gamma rays, and the Earth wouldn't explode, but you wouldn't be able to live on it.
If there was...
No, we'd just be filled with incredible holes.
Right.
I guess we're getting a little off topic, but say there was a black hole, you know, so far away, but it was visible. Would we die?
No, I mean, the black holes that we... First of all, it wouldn't be visible anyway, but it'd be detectable. Oh, yeah. There are black holes that are visible in that sense from Earth that we can observe. But when we're talking about close, we're talking about like within our stellar neighborhood. So say within, you know, 100 light years, you know, something like that. That's actually not that far in space terms. That would be a real problem, potentially.
If Earth was to get sucked in, we would die, right?
Immediately, yeah. That
would get very thin.
Yeah, You would get stretched out. They call it spaghettification.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When we did our black hole thing, we talked about this.
Yeah, because what happens is your one end of you is closer to the center of the black hole than the other, so the end that's closer gets pulled harder, and therefore gets stretched out. And that process, you can imagine you going and going and going.
Is it quick or is it slow?
Time, that's a good question, because time actually slows down for you as you enter the black hole. So, from an observer, you would appear to just be sitting there at the edge of the black hole. They wouldn't actually see you go into it. And so it would take forever. But from your point of view, it would happen instantly. You would be dead like that. So, yeah, talking about time and the edges of a black hole get real difficult because time is pretty malleable at that spot. So, Star Wars.
No,
Ewoks. Yeah, they're bears.
Oh, they're my favorite. Ewoks are the best.
Do you think the Ewoks are the best?
Yeah, they're the best. They're just a little fat, like, I don't even know, like little fat, like...
Teddy bears.
Yeah.
They're talking teddy bears.
I think I used to call them Chewoks when I was little.
What to say about, I mean, evolution...
They don't really do anything.
No, I mean, evolution is very, very variable. So depending in the right environment, absolutely you could get a creature that looked like that. There's
the probability though of finding all of those same entities in the same galaxy. How would you calculate that?
The odds of you mean how many sentient races?
Yeah, Star Wars all takes place in one galaxy, right? Intergalactic travel, as far as I know. Unless the end of the book they may have talked about it, but again, let's just not worry about that because you know how can you possibly cover all that? Mm-hmm. So Star Wars is in one galaxy and it's chock full of alien races.
Is it or isn't it, though? Because I think the number of alien races, you could probably come up with, like, maybe, assuming all, even with all the extended universe stuff, let's say 100, but there would be 100 billion stars in that galaxy. So the odds are still pretty good that, you know, even if, you've got 1 in a billion stars, that's pretty good to have a sentient race on it.
You bring up a good point, though. They all have to be sentient.
Right.
They all have to have the capability of space travel,
mm-hmm.
you know, at a certain point. I mean, they all have to pick all this stuff up.
Mostly,
and,
yeah.
And language education in the Star Wars galaxy is pretty amazing.
No, yeah, they all speak English. It's really helpful.
They all speak English, or everyone speaks. You either speak English or you speak every alien race known to man. You understand it, you just don't speak it.
Right, like you never hear Han Solo speak Chewbacca's language back to him.
Yeah.
He just speaks to him in English.
There's a rebuilder, he gets close to him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely getting grumbly as he gets older.
One question I've always had for Star Wars is, it goes on, it's the same. First, you never really see them reload. I don't think you really do. So, how many, because they shoot lasers, right?
Right.
So how many lasers can you fit inside of a gun?
Well, a laser is energy, right? So, it's like, how much light can you fit in a flashlight battery? So the question is, for just like with a lightsaber, you need an energy source that can produce a beam of light that is condensed and hot enough to kill the person on the receiving end of it, right? So far, we actually do have, for example, like diamond cutting laser type stuff. So there are lasers that you can use to damage something in the real world. But with our current technology, the energy sources for those things are way too big to lug around.
Brandon does bring up a good point, though, which is no one in Star Wars ever goes like, "Oh, I'm out."
Yeah, it's true. I've never heard someone say, "I'm out."
Yeah.
Although they break down a lot, right? Like, I feel like there's times where it's like, it's jammed.
I think in Spaceballs they might run out, but that's a whole different...
Well, we can do the science of Spaceballs on another episode.
Your science of Spaceballs.
What is the appropriate password? Instead of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Schwartz.
I mean, that's the thing, is you don't have to, quote-unquote, run out of ammo because you're not shooting a physical object, but you would definitely run out of electricity or whatever these things run off. I don't know. I guess
it's the same thing with the light speed. You have to assume they found a way.
Yeah, that's what Dan Lewis mentioned this term earlier. It's called suspension of disbelief, which is, you know, you... There are plenty of reasons. yeah, there are plenty of reasons to look at this and go, this doesn't make any sense. But who cares? It's fun, right? Do you want to talk about a different topic then? Do you want to move on to something else?
Well, I guess I'm the first thing I saw was artificial intelligence, because that's one of the biggest things in there, is there's so much, like, R2-D2 and C-3PO, and everything is artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and it's not clear how intelligent they are. Like, are they... They, you know, they...
And the new one, they feel. Like, the one... Didn't he feel when the guy left?
BB-8? Yeah. They make him do those, like... He makes it, like, head dip down and goes, like... And yeah. It's a sad noise.
Gosh. I mean, they also feel... They seem to feel physical pain, too, which I find to be interesting. You know, there's a lot of moments where they you know, like, in that Jabba's palace, they're, like, torturing droids.
Yeah. Although, by the same token, like, in Empire Strikes Back, C-3PO gets completely disassembled, and he's, you know, he isn't screaming, oh my god, my arm's cut off, but he's mostly like, his attitude's more like, oh dear, I seem to be apart, whatever he said. So they can feel pain. Maybe C-3PO just isn't programmed to feel pain.
But they can also feel mental or...
Emotions, yeah. I don't know. They certainly seem to be that way. They make R2 make a lot of noises that are...
Like, in the movie.
If R2 had a human voice, he'd be like Danny DeVito or something, because they always been why that he is like a wise ass, you know what I mean? Everything he says is like... okay, R2, relax.
Right. Yeah, he's very sassy for a robot.
He's sassy. Very sassy.
I mean, look, we're approaching that now. I mean, we're not anywhere near being able to have these, you know, lightsabers or, you know, planet-killing space stations and stuff.
Better hope not with where we are now.
Yeah, Elon Musk will create it. We are actually closing in on artificial intelligence. Our computers...
Which is, in a way, not a good thing, right?
Some scientists would say no. Stephen Hawking, for example, famously came out and said, like, this it could be very bad. Because you reach what's called the singularity. And the singularity is the moment when computers become self-aware. And at that point, if they start to become smarter than us. And then they figure out how... Each computer says, well, we can build... Right. But imagine a computer that goes, well, I'm going to make a computer that's twice as smart as I am. And that computer says, I'm going to do this. And the computers now start to accelerate away from us. And our meat brains aren't going to get any smarter anytime soon.
Well, if that computer was so smart, why didn't he go and make a smart computer, right? What an idiot.
Yeah. That'd be like, yeah, it's like finding your own replacement at work. They're like, oh, here, now you can fire me. I found this guy who's better at my job.
I have a question, Doug.
Yeah.
I think I looked this up once, but I can't remember the answer. So we've actually talked about two different kinds of singularities in this conversation. We talked about the black hole, which is considered a singularity.
Yep.
And the moment when computers become self-aware is also referred to as a singularity. Why?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer. I mean, I know that the black hole singularity term came up first, and it's because it is literally a single point in space, an infinitely small compressed point.
I think I know why. I probably won't articulate this as well as I should, but once computers become self-aware, it's an exponential growth past that point, right? I mean, like, yeah. At that point, it sort of balloons outward in kind of an uncontainable fashion.
Yeah, and I forget who coined that term. It might be Ray Kurzweil, I think, came up with it. But it's a point of no return. But look, they get along just fine with C-3PO. I mean, it depends on... The reality is, if we make artificial intelligence, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be bad. The flip side of that argument is, like, all right, we're smart, and for the most part, we get along. There's no reason to assume that any smart computer is automatically going to assume, you know, it is going to be Skynet and kill us.
I think the problem is we made so many movies where the computers turn bad that we're scared.
Like, yeah, they might keep us as pets, you don't know.
Right. They might see us as a threat or something that needs to be exterminated. And there is some evidence for that in the fossil record. If you look and say, look, you don't run into a Neanderthal anytime soon, and one of the reasons that may be is because early Homo sapiens might have wiped them out or interbred with them, or for whatever reason, they're gone. So the fear is, hey, we create computers, we become obsolete.
Well, I think the problem will be if artificial intelligence is anything like us.
Yeah.
If it's anything like human beings, we're done.
Well, that's why I think C-3PO is important, because if we make them foppish, they're less of a threat.
Yeah, you just gotta make them a bunch of dandies.
Yeah, you make a bunch of dandy robots, and they're not so, it's not so dangerous anymore.
I think we should do a whole show on AI. That'd be.
Mm-hmm. We could do a show on AI. Definitely, we'll put a pin in that.
So I'm looking at this, and one thing that is we were kind of talking about earlier is General Grievous and Darth Vader's suit. So suits in general is kind of something
like cybernetics.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I mean we're working on that too. Like,
Luke Skywalker's hand.
Yeah, that's another one. Like, in fact, I wonder if the movie was in part an inspiration for some of these current prosthetics, because it used to be if you lost your hand, they'd give you like a mannequin hand,
yeah,
or maybe something you could attach, like, you know, a hook or a claw onto, something that you could use. But no, I mean like with different attachments depending on what you're doing.
That's kind of funny to me now. Like here's a claw.
Yeah. So, but now, if you go online, you can see that they're starting to make prosthetics where they can sense your nerve signals, and that allows the person who is using it to be able to tell it to, say, move a finger or a thumb and grip things. It doesn't nearly have the dexterity of your original hand. Right. That's, yeah. But that's assuming you're using a chainsaw for a hand. But
the biggest thing for me is General Grievous, because they never go in on him, because I don't understand General Grievous, because all you see is two eyes and George Lucas's coughs throughout the movie.
Yeah, and then at one point Obi-Wan like pries his chest open, yeah, and there's like a heart. So he's basically a heart and a head in a jar, yeah, and then the rest is all a suit.
So what are they called? All the books, the
expanded universe.
Do they have a book on him or whatever? A movie?
I think there is some comic book stuff on what he used to be before he got all blown up.
That doesn't make sense. Even if any medical thing can help, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, we're able to replace right now individual like limbs or like, yeah, a heart, but I don't know how much. I don't think we're anywhere near being able to say we can sever your head and, you know, supply it with enough oxygen and nutrients to keep that alive, and then you can just walk around in a mechanical body. But that idea has been around for a long time. That if you read H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, which is the original Alien Invasion book.
Oh, the one where everybody got scared on the radio play?
Well, that was a radio play version of the original novel. But in the novel, they describe the Martians' physiology, and one of the things H.G. Wells says is they aren't cybernetic themselves, but they have evolved to a point where their bodies are somewhat useless, so they put themselves in suits for various applications. So they have a bunch of tentacles, so they can control things with
levers. So like Chicken Little?
Yeah, essentially, yes. So, but that's different from trying to keep severed organs alive, mm-hmm, and functioning, so... We're not there, but it'd be great. I mean, it'd be good to know that if you were ever injured in a car accident or something and you lost something, there would be an artificial version that would last long enough to keep you going. We have artificial hearts. We have, you know, some of these things, but not enough to get to where Grievous is, where he's 90% machine.
What about telekinesis? Would you call the Force a form of that?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, that's certainly... Now you're really getting out there in terms of science, because there is no... there's obviously no scientific demonstration or evidence for telekinesis in the real world. That's moving things with your mind, the way like Yoda, yeah, lifts up the X-Wing out of the swamp, right?
Yeah, I mean, that to me, if there's no scientific basis or something, then I feel like we have to assume completely not scientifically known.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with telekinesis is our Newton's laws, right? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Well, what's the opposite reaction to lifting this thing? Like, there's no... You can't lift it up without some force down. It would have to be
maybe the force
some
is
energy.
Like a magnet. There's a magnet that you're always using.
I mean, that's the great thing about the force, is it's kind of whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
I will say this though. So the force as a concept obviously owes its yet to a lot of kind of Eastern thoughts and things like that.
Like chi.
You know, the light Jedi I think embody this a lot more. There is a scientific basis for things like meditation. Value of meditation in terms of finding a change in the alpha patterns of your brain waves and actually feeling a connection to the environment around you. Your sense of self can actually be part of your brain that says, I'm separate from my environment, can actually be turned off in a sense through meditation. It's been proven with measuring people's brain waves and stuff like that. So there is, though it's not as cool as like shooting light
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, and in a large part, your brain has evolved to recognize possible threats, right? That's the most basic thing that any intelligent creature, I mean, say, you know, a dog or, any four-legged animal, a lizard, their first thing they have to learn to do is something trying to kill me, right? I need to recognize the threat. But in our noisy modern lives, there are always, you know, sounds going off. There's things happening that constantly distract you. And if you're able to sort of calm your mind and not let those distractions in, you can, sort of like you were talking about, Dan, achieve, certainly people would say maybe not enlightenment, but it would allow you to go farther with your thought process, not being distracted all the time.
Right, I would like that aspect when these shows and movies, you know, sort of like Luke, turn off your targeting system, right? So that's such a great analogy for letting go of your conscious mind, your desire to only see what's in front of you, and open up your more emotive and feeling part of yourself. And of course, in doing so, unlock a lot of the power of your subconscious mind.
Yeah. Got what else, Brandon?
There's
Is there something that happens in one of the movies you want to, like a particular moment or?
Cloning. I know it's in there, but that, and I know that's the prequels, which blah blah. But still,
I put stuff from the prequels on there because they're still worth talking about for science.
I mean, I still think the idea of cloning is really cool. But why keep a bounty hunter? Why keep a bounty hunter in charge of the clone army?
I don't know. He's in charge of the army. He certainly. Maybe he's there because he has experience in terms of combat, and they want him there as a consultant or as a teaching role. And I'm not sure why he is chosen as the candidate. Like, we're going to make all the clones out of this guy. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what it is about him. The interesting thing about cloning, and I don't know if it's addressed in the movie. It's been a while since I saw Attack of the Clones. But when you clone something, you're not cloning a fully formed adult. You know, it's not a Xerox. It's like an identical twin. You're making a new baby out of the same DNA. So this person...
that would make the clone army a lot less threatening.
They're all babies. I don't know, man. One baby can be pretty damaging. I don't know. I mean, they're just so expensive.
You're going to take care of this. No!
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever seen the... what is it called? Where they come out of the pet cemetery. That baby's pretty...
undead babies. Zombie babies are pretty freaky. So I don't know that they might have... I thought they addressed it. Maybe they build in some kind of accelerated aging into them so they grow to adults sooner.
I think that's cool.
Drink coffee and smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. You end up being like one of those child stars that... the Olsen twins. You live fast and hard. And
They gave them one of Lindsay Lohan's DNA strains.
The strand that does all the drinking and cocaine.
Yeah, they would eat rapidly.
Right. But yeah, you would have to do that. Otherwise, I mean, because I think they say that the clone army was implemented sometime after Phantom Menace, but obviously is in full swing by the time of Attack of the Clones, so that's not enough time to grow a bunch of adults.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel compelled to say that I always thought that the idea of a clone army Star Wars universe was sort of a letdown. I always really liked the idea that is sort of implied by the New Hope, the Empire, and Jedi entries, is that they're just some guys. They're just like workaday stiff, you know, who are working for the Empire. And I guess we're supposed to believe that it ultimately did become a volunteer force or whatever. And then I guess in Force Awakens it then progressed into like a draft. But so there's sort of three phases weird clone army, then I think they started actually taking on people so they weren't all just Jango Fett running around, and then you get to Force Awakens where they steal you as a child and force you to join the army.
Yeah, I guess the concept behind the clone army would be a couple of things. One was that it could be kept secret because these weren't people that were known to anyone else, and two, they could be programmed to follow that Order 66 or whatever eventually. Right, they're inherently loyal, and they're thoroughly expendable. So no one is sad when they all die.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get those, like, you know, caskets with the Imperial flag draped over them on TV.
Hey, that would be cool. Let's show that imagery. That'd be neat.
Maybe they'll do that in the next one.
Imperial funeral? Yeah, are you kidding me?
Yeah, you never see that.
Yeah.
So. One thing that it kind of goes back to the fuel and everything is you never those giant the star not the, they're called Star Destroyers, right?
The huge ones.
The ones that you see in The Force Awakens, like in the sand planet where it's like
they're crashed.
Yeah. They never stop and get fuel.
Yeah, again, I mean, some of the stuff is just like, look, I mean, very rarely do we see kind of the minutia of characters' lives where it's like, all right, I'm going to stop and go to the bathroom, and then we're going to get on with this lightsaber battle. Like, you don't see that.
I feel like that was almost in the prequel. That level of storytelling almost made it in there.
There are a lot of fart jokes.
I would say that whole podcast, that Padre secret,
Well, I don't know if there would have been a big podcast sequence in the middle of Phantom Menace. I don't know if that would have been better or worse. In terms of like their fuel, that's right. Thanks, Liam Neeson. I think for the fueling, I mean, you look at like the Earth version of that, which is a battleship, right? They're enormous and they use crazy amounts of fuel, but a space version would actually have a slight advantage in that it doesn't have to cut through air or water. There's no drag on a spaceship. And sort of like we talked about in the Pluto episode, we have spaceships that use ion engines. And what they do is they throw xenon atoms out the back at a high speed. But what happens when you throw something back? There's going to be some force forward, right? Because of that equal and opposite reaction. The force will awaken. It's force being mass times acceleration. So that will accelerate you a tiny, tiny bit. But if you keep doing that, you'll actually build up to some crazy high speeds. It just takes a long, long, long time to build up to that point.
That had been in the movie. Like, look, the force is just mass times acceleration. Use it. Use the force.
Measured it in newtons, Luke. solve the equation. So yeah, I mean, you can have a Star Destroyer that uses less fuel than a land-based equipment because it can just coast through empty space. But, and I think they kind of show you this, I mean, it's not like those things can turn on a dime. I mean, yeah. they are very big and slow. Their job is to be big and covered with weapons and basically house TIE fighters that can then go out and do more damage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you saw, I think for the first time, really, in the films, atmospheric space combat, which I don't know that they've ever shown before, at least not in the real trilogy.
You mean when they're, you're talking about that scene where they're on Maz Kanata's planet, and they're fighting...
Yeah, X-Wings and TIE fighters going at it in an atmosphere as opposed to in space. It was sort of interesting that they did that. I mean, you know, when you look at the designs of those crafts, they certainly don't have anything to represent
aerodynamics.
Closely resembling wings, you know, with, as we know them on planes, you know, the lift, you wouldn't get lift. So I guess they would have to use the
thrust.
Called in the Star Wars universe, repulsor technology.
Right.
To defy gravity.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you just have to use pure thrust at that point, like a rocket would, to maintain altitude and control yourself. I'm trying to remember. Is there maybe on Hoth? There's a little of that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you got your snow speeders versus the Imperial.
The AT-ATs.
Interestingly, there's no Imperial spacecraft involved in that exchange. Land to air.
And I think they're trying to buy enough time for the fleet to get off the ground. Right? They're actually on the ground and they're trying to fly away.
Yeah.
I don't know why they would come out of orbit, but
what is the scientific basis? Down a walker
with your toe cable. I think that one actually is just like it is in the movie. I mean, it trips.
Sure.
It trips and it falls. Which is why you wouldn't build a walker.
I always thought that because in the movie, it's like this maverick move. He kind of gets this idea, like, all right, we've got to do this. And in video games, they're always like, oh, just use your toe cable. Like that's like standard operating procedure.
Well, yeah, it worked once. Now it's like, all right, now we're all going to tow cable school for a week to make sure we can do it.
Well, there is a basis for that kind of thing in war, you know, where you find out, you know what, this it's like a sticky bomb in Saving Private Ryan. Remember that, where they take a standard issue sock, you put a grenade in it, you smear it up with grease, and it actually, you can stick it to things, and that's something apparently they would do.
Yeah. No, I think definitely in the fog of war, like if someone comes up with an ingenious idea, it will stick around. All right, Brandon, any other topics you want to do or want to?
I wish I could remember. I need to freshen up on these movies because there's so much to cover and I haven't seen them in years.
All right, well, I think we've certainly covered a lot of ground. Dan, is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we start wrapping it up?
I have one more thing.
Yeah.
What is the point of the two little cross lightsabers on Kylo Ren's lightsaber? What is the point of that?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that is super stupid.
I've heard the explanation is that his lightsaber is not particularly well put together. It's like, you know, amateur. No, seriously. It's like so much pent up rage, right? Like it's got so much energy that it needs to vent. And so these two things on the sides are like allowing some of the excess energy out.
Because I think like people say so. It's kind of, it does not look anything better. I like the normal flashlight looking lightsaber.
On the other hand, I have to admit, it's a much better design because that cross guard prevents your hand from being cut off, and if there's one thing that happens in the Star Wars universe is that your hand gets severed all the time.
Okay.
So, like, I think it's practical.
Wait a minute. We're going to have a debate here because I actually don't think it's a better design. First of all, you've got the hilt extends outward into the cross guard, which means that the hilt must then be made of some kind of lightsaber-proof material, which is super lame.
Right.
That just takes away all of the magic of the lightsaber. As soon as you come up with a material that it can't cut through, it loses all of its luster.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so you've got this piece of the hilt that's sticking out. It makes no sense, right? Like that was something the fans had, or the nerd fans, or the complainers, or whatever you want to call them, had identified immediately when they saw that thing. And I'm inclined to agree. I think it was done as a design choice. And I actually don't think a lot of thought went into it. I've never heard the explanation that it was just constructed to lightsaber poorly.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't heard that. I guess that's an interesting interpretation of it. But I also think it limits your movement. It actually limits what you can do with it because, you know, you cut your own hand.
Right.
Your stupid cross guard.
I think he's good.
Yeah.
Great.
I guess what you would do is you would have to, like, You would have internally an extra lightsaber to act as a block, but then you would build something around it, so you, like metal, so then it wouldn't touch the sides. That way you could block yourself without cutting yourself.
Here's the other thing. When lightsabers hit each other, they're not like swords. Like a sword, you can slide down the blade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a cross guard makes sense to hit that and stop. Lightsabers seem to do one of two things. They either seem to kind of like hold against each other, or they kind of like bounce off each other. But I don't think I've ever seen two lightsabers kind of slide along each other.
I guess I'd have to go back and watch. I feel like maybe there is a scene somewhere in one of the movies, but yeah, you're right. They don't tend to do that. They tend to like stick, and that's when they like glower at each other because, they're just lightsabering so hard.
Saber harder.
Harder. That's a good point. I hadn't even thought of talking about the Kylo Ren lightsaber. That was a big bone of contention on the internet.
You get to a sort of an artistic point where you can't do anything. I mean, you got these lightsabers. You got to keep coming up with new things to do with them. And
right.
It does get a little silly.
Well, you got the Darth Maul double-sided
one. Well, I think Darth Maul is the biggest waste character because he could have been so awesome with his double. And then he dies throughout the first movie.
Yeah, there was a lot of, wasted potential there. It's certainly visually, it's very striking and cool-looking, but as a character, he's just sort of nothing.
That's
at least that was a bow, right? They're kind of mirroring up the idea of a staff with his lightsaber.
It's just two lightsabers back-to-back is all it is. It's not that, revolutionary.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It did look cool.
Yeah, but Kylo Ren's, I just don't think... I think it's just kind of like a stupid design.
Well, I'm curious to see if they come up... I know they've come up with a few in, the cartoons, the Clone Wars stuff or the Rebels. There's probably a few other, slightly different designs.
I think there's, the girl has the ones that's curved a little bit, which there's no point for that.
I don't know how you would curve the lightsaber,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, and I've watched the clones, and she has, a curve where, the thing that you hold is curved.
Hmm.
So it's,
I think it's just textbook kind of looking in the wrong place, and they're like, oh, everyone has to have a different lightsaber, because it's not like, I don't know if I would see that. If I saw that movie and everything was great, but it was a lightsaber design I had seen before, I don't think I would be upset,
No.
Oh, that's a
Yeah. No, I wouldn't be disappointed. Definitely the story comes first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they have all these different colors. At least in the original, I have to give them credit for not, like, having a lightsaber that had, like, five other lightsabers shooting out for it, you know?
Right. Anything else, guys? You want to...
I think we covered...
I think we covered a lot, yeah. Well, thanks so much for doing this, Dan. This is a lot of fun.
Sure, yeah. I wish I had more to offer scientifically, but... Before we break, I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, Brandon, this isn't super science-y, but what is your preferred order of the movies in terms of your favorite?
Like first to worst?
Yeah.
I think the best one is the second one.
You mean Empire Strikes Back?
Empire Strikes Back is number...
You mean you want
five.
Yeah, number five. So, number five, I think, is the best. And then I like number six, then four, then three, then two, then one.
Where does seven fit in there?
Oh, seven. Okay, darn it. Seven will probably... I like seven more than number... four, probably.
Okay, so you're going 5, 6, 7, 4, 3, 2, 1?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd agree with that. That's a fair order. I think I might... I don't know where I put seven. I liked seven a lot.
I think four was a little slow in terms where, like, it had a slow part.
You have to give four credit because it's the original.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of wonderful things about it, but I think, you know, it's you go back and maybe it's just because the budget was a little lower and stuff, and a few things kind of, like, don't quite gel together as well as they should, but it's still an exceptional movie. I mean, it's still great.
For as old as it is, and it still holds up.
Yeah, it still looks great. So, Dan, what's your order?
Empire, A New Hope, Jedi, Force Awakens, Star Tours, and the rest don't exist.
I forgot about Star Tours.
Star Tours almost edges out Force Awakens.
Star Tours has like 35 different ones.
Well, and then don't forget the holiday special.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it has this moment. It's pretty much just the moments with Harrison Ford, because I still feel like he does already.
Well, on that note, I think that's a good place to stop. A couple of admin things. If you like our show, go to quarksandrec.com, email us at quarksandrec, or tweet us at quarksandrec, or go to our Facebook quarksandrec page. Coming up next, we're doing the science of video games. That should be really cool. I'm trying to work on a pretty cool guest to have for that. Hopefully we can get him in. Thanks again, Dan, for doing this. This was awesome.
Sure, and insofar as I can plug anything, I'll just say my comedy group, Lost Moon Radio, and I know you've been a good supporter of ours, Doug. We got some exciting stuff on the horizon. It will be showing up on True TV, hopefully in March.
That's great.
So if anyone's interested, lostmoonradio.com. I'm sure all the details will be up there when we have them.
Yeah, and if you're ever in the Southern California area, if you can catch a Lost Moon Radio show, you owe it to yourself to do it. They are absolutely phenomenal. Alright, with that, I guess there's nothing else left to say except may the force be with you.
May the force be with you.
Always. Alright, bye.